This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We're going to have a great show, and it's a beautiful day today. And we want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, Melissa Warren's business. And what they do is they go into your home 24/7, take care of all the responsibilities inside your home when you're no longer able to do that. They run errands for you. They just make sure that you can stay at home and still enjoy your retirement and the life that, the way it's meant to. And if that sounds good to you, give them a call at 713-4639 or check them out on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And you actually can go over to their place of business, 237 Castlewood Drive. That's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you can always tell a professional because they show up right on time. And Dickie, I really appreciate you being on with me today.
Radio time, man. Radio time.
And we had some bad news yesterday. One of our good friends, Buster Lane, passed on yesterday.
I did not know that.
Yes, he did. Had a call. Well, actually, I found out last night. And Buster had meant so much to the community, as the whole Lane family. And I got to talk to Avent last night. And it's left a big hole in our community. But I'm sure Buster has gone to a better place right now. And I did want to mention Dan Mitchell and Patty Hamlin and Bill Gilliam today. They're very close to me, and they're having some tough times too. But hopefully they're going to get better and bounce back.
We'll keep them in our prayers.
Yes. Now, I had you on last Friday, but we had so much going on, I really didn't have time to talk to you. I mean, you could cut in every once in a while. I know you're not used to that.
Well, no, I enjoyed listening to your other guests talk about the reunion, and a lot of familiar names came up. So that was fun.
Isn't that the fun part of, especially radio, when you got a local radio, that you can get into the personal things and talk about the people that have meant so much to you over the years. And you and I did a little bit of that last week, talking about some of the great sports stars and the people that you and I...
Yeah.
What's happening?
You know, and I actually got a text message last week from one of my friends over at MTSU that heard the show. And now, talking about radio, and I brought something for you to look at. This picture...
I wish we could show it to everybody.
Yeah, this picture was given to me by John Hood. I think he actually gave it to my sister for her to give to me. But anyway, this is John Hood and Ray Duffy broadcasting high school basketball back in the, I would say, the late 40s or early 50s. I had a copy of that made and gave it to the station. I don't think they've put it up yet, but it's you can tell Ray and John.
Look how young they are. My goodness.
This is my father sitting right next to
John.
Oh,
wow.
This is my mom sitting right back here. This is my brother, and I think this is me. But unfortunately, or maybe fortunately.
They cut your head off.
Or maybe fortunately. They cut our heads off.
We see part of B.E.'s head.
Yeah, right.
Goodness gracious.
But that's a wonderful picture, and I really appreciate John getting that to me.
Now, that was pure back in. That was entertainment in Rutherford County.
They said right on the front row of the bleachers at Central High School Gym with a little table and their sign, their monitor.
It almost looked like a little bit almost like a parquet floor like they had at Boston.
That's the Central High School gym.
Goodness gracious. You got a lot of history in that. How do you get a copy of this?
Well, I went down and Bill Shacklett made some for me.
I need to get a copy of that. That is absolutely, yeah. That's bringing history right in front of you.
Yeah, it really is. And
at that time, had you already gotten the bug to call ball games?
You know, I'm sitting right behind them.
Yeah.
I, for some reason, I guess maybe I had.
Well, now somebody told me a story, and it kind of mirrors, I guess, a little bit of John Ward. I have heard stories from people that have been close to you for years. They would tell me that you used to practice calling games on your own, like you were, I guess, rehearsing for a role.
I did do that, but I didn't do it out loud. I kind of did it in my head. Uh-huh. And for the most part, it was down at Sulphur Dale when the Nashville Vols would play, and I went there a lot. I had some great, my parents took me a lot, and then I had an aunt that I stayed with some during the summer, and she'd take me every night if I wanted to go. And, of course, I always wanted to go. So, I did a lot of that in my head. I never did really practice it out loud very much because I was really kind of ashamed for people to hear me doing that.
You know, around here, especially in our era, we all wanted to be sports stars of some kind. I absolutely love baseball, as you know. And my dad, thank goodness, and mom, they would take us to Sulphur Dale quite often. And it was like, I guess, a kid living in Boston
going to Fenway Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And I can remember sitting in there, and the very first game I saw the Yankees come, and I think twice. Mm-hmm. And we were at a night game, and you know in right field, the short porch over there.
The hill.
They had a huge screen.
Right.
And it was wired.
And the hill,
and
right?
And a huge hill. Mm-hmm. And actually, sometimes I think Buster Bogusky played right field instead of second base.
Right.
It was that close.
Yeah.
And I think it was, and in fact, I'm sure it was, if Yogi hit one, and I thought it was gone. I mean, it looked like it was going to clear the fence by 20 feet. I couldn't see that wire at night, and I was just so baffled over that.
That screen went up, gosh, it must be 100 feet or more.
Oh, it was huge. Yeah. And, of course, left field was a monster.
Right.
And then they had the hill in left field. So you really had to really rack one.
Center field was about 450 feet. It had a little terrace up there.
And the amazing thing about center field is, I think it was Mantle's either first year or second year, I saw him hit a line drive. It was just like it was shot out of a cannon. Hit that center field wall. It's almost instantaneous from when he hit the ball to hit that center field. I've never seen anything like it in my whole life. And he was he's a blur going around the bases. I've never seen anybody in my whole life that had that much talent.
He could run and hit and throw.
He could do it all.
Yep.
And unfortunately, like a lot of people, he came from Commerce, Oklahoma, and he had all that great talent. But if you get around people who like to maybe get you away from the sport and do other things, you know, have a little drink or something like that, it really did tarnish his career.
Yeah, he liked to go out and have a good time.
Thanks to Whitey and Billy and all that bunch.
Yeah.
We knew all the baseball players by name back then. We knew we could tell who was winning in each league. And it was just something that our attention wasn't diverted from those people, and the players did not change from team to team. You didn't have a whole lot of people team swapping at that
time. I may have told you this before, but I came along before baseball cards.
Now, you're kidding me.
No. I came along before baseball cards were that popular. What we used to do with baseball cards when I was growing up, we'd put them in between the spokes of our bicycles.
Oh, it's too sacred for me. I would not do that.
But here's what I did. I had a spiral notebook, mm-hmm. and there were 16 major league teams, eight in each league.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a page or maybe two pages for each team. And when the paper would come out, they'd put little headshots in there all the time of the players, mm-hmm. when they would, you know, do something. So I'd cut out every one of those headshots, and I would paste them onto their team page. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't use glue. I used the little things that you used to fix to stamps. If you ever collected stamps, they have a little hinged adhesive thing you put on the back where they don't stay
right
to the stick to the paper. I'd use those little adhesive things, and I had I had a lot of players from every team in my notebook, and At one time, I found a bunch of old newspapers next door, back in a storage room in a house that had been there a long time, and I found a bunch, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven because there were papers from the 40s and the 30s back there with pictures of these guys who played back then, even had it already retired, you know. So I cut all them out and made a special notebook for them. But no, I never did collect baseball cards.
I'm surprised because I had everything. I went all the way back to Ruth. And I was particularly fond of the Yankees. I had every Yankee player at one time that played from the 20s all the way up through the early 60s. And then I went off to the service like a lot of guys did back when we were younger. And when I came back, Mama had found another use for them. They were, and how many times have you heard this story? Mine were in shoe boxes, just piled up on top of each other, and they denoted the decade that they all were in.
Tell what, I did collect comic books, and I had a lot of first edition. I heard Jim Averett talking about that yesterday on the show, and I had some Volume 1, Number 1 comic books, and I subscribed by mail. I got them in the mail. And when I went off to college, and I had them all stacked up in little, neat little stacks all around my room, and they were gone. They were gone.
You think back about it. Oh, I wish. I probably would not have sold them. I know they're of immense value right now.
Yeah, I had autographs. I went to Sulphurdale to see the Braves and the Dodgers. So I had autographs. Newcomb, Snyder,
You're a Dodger,
Ralph
man.
Branca, Campanella. All those guys. Uh-huh. You see what I've got on my head, don't you?
Yeah. I didn't realize that you were a Dodger fan. In fact, all this time, I thought you were a Yankee fan.
The team that I disliked the most growing up was the Yankees. And wouldn't you know it, that's the team they put me on in Little League my first year. But, no, I've never been a Yankee fan. That word just had too much of a connotation to me. But right now, I'm a Braves fan.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, but this is the team I coach in the over in the Optimus League. So,
well, we're really not committed. We're the Rattlers. and my grandson Drew plays on the Rattlers, plays shortstop, and just absolutely, I love every one of those kids. I mean, it's neat to be around 10-year-olds and watch them grow.
Let me put in a plug for Optimus League is having its championship games tonight. I think there'll be four championship games on four fields.
Wow.
And starting at 7:00, so we'd like everybody to come out, and even if you don't have a dog in the hunt, just come out and see these kids play. And
now, which field are going to?
We're going to field 1, 2, 3, and 5. Mm-hmm. Any of those fields at Starplex out behind Sportscom. So
that's always amazing to me when we're talking about Sulphurdale. Sulphurdale was unique, and ballparks were not cookie-cuttered back then like they are now. And we have very few of them left. I mean, you got Fenway Park. It's kind of almost mirrors a little bit of Sulphurdale when you think about it.
Yeah, a little bit because it's so unique. And they tried to make the Houston ballpark a little bit. They tried to take a few things from each of the old ballparks and compromise that into or encompass that into the ballpark. And I understand the Baltimore park is really a beauty, but I haven't been able to go there yet.
It looked like the one in Miami is kind of broken away a little bit because that's a pretty big ballpark.
Yes, it is.
You got a lot of room out in the outfield.
Yeah, but it's under a roof. I don't like baseball indoors.
You know, that's one of the funniest things. A friend of mine knew that I liked the Cardinals also besides the Yankees. And one of the reasons was my dad loved the St. Louis Cardinals. And I think it was because it was probably the one that was closest to our location here at the time.
Right.
And he loved Stan Musial and some of those great players.
Red Shane Deans.
He loved Red Shane Deans. And the Deans, of course.
Right.
But I got to attend one of the first games at the Astrodome when they first built it.
Mm-hmm.
And now there was another one. Now, it was indoors, but it took a rocket to get out of the Astrodome. And do you know who hit the first home run or hit the ceiling who was the first player to hit the ceiling to become a home run?
No, I don't.
Mickey Mantle.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he rocked it. Of course, that shouldn't surprise you. But when we would go to Suffolk Dell, I can still remember how it was laid out. And it's one of those things I have heard Bob Costas describe his first time that he went to Yankee Stadium. And when he explained it, it was almost like what I viewed when I went to Suffolk Dell. I mean, I really couldn't tell much difference. And back then, that was the major leagues for us.
Right.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Dickie Palmer.
Well, I feel honored to be talking to someone like Dick Palmer. I happened to be on some of the trips with Dick Palmer when we went to St. Louis and Cincinnati. Dick is one of the beginners and one of the faithful people in keeping Little League and Pee-wee baseball or whatever you want to call it going in Murfreesboro. I have a grandson playing for the Optimist League out at the Sportscom, and he will be playing Monday night. And so much to Dick Palmer. And I'd like to ask Dick if he could recall and talk a little bit about that great, I mean, it was one of the most outstanding slow pitch softball teams that has ever been, and it was Palmer's produce. Would you mind talking about that, Dick?
I'll be glad to, Jack. In fact, I have a picture of that team that I've been meaning to get to, Jack.
My dad's on that team.
You're kidding.
Brian's dad, James Barrett, was our shortstop.
And my oldest brother was the bat boy. He could barely carry the bat,
so
I'm sure.
I brought you. You're the one that got the picture to me.
I got the picture to you, posted it on Facebook.
Right,
so, yeah.
And I had a copy made down at Shacklett's. But, we played for the City League Championship, I think, 3 years in a row, won it twice, and lost to a team from Walter Hill in the other one. In fact, we might have played them every year for the championship because but we had some great players on that team. Jack Jolly was our pitcher.
You're a kid.
No, he was our slow pitch softball pitcher. Gene Russell was the catcher, Whirlie.
Remember him well.
I think I played first. James Barrett played short. B.C. Nice played in the outfield. Mac Baskin played in the outfield. And Charlie Lyons played in the outfield. Charlie Lyons hit a ball so far one night out at Stones River. They used to play adjacent to the Stones River Bridge out on Memorial, now Lebanon Highway.
Right.
There was a cornfield back behind. Charlie Lyons hit a ball so far one night into that cornfield, they never did find it. And he played center field.
Did you have to stop the game?
No. I just after he circled the bases, they quit looking. And he played center field, and he could go get them. And one night, somebody from the other team hit one into the cornfield in center field, and Charlie Lyons went into the cornfield. You could just barely see his glove go up, caught the ball, and when he came out, he was wet from from the letters of his uniform down because of the dew that was out there.
Charlie Lyons, he belonged in another level, as
yeah,
I like to mean.
Yeah, and Mac Baskin did, too.
People like that, I can remember when we would play softball some of just kind of pickup games, and there's always one guy that you would rather walk and let him hit, and Randy King was the one
that's right.
We had.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a player like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's
dominant player.
There's a huge difference in playing softball, especially when you're playing soft pitch or slow pitch, than it is playing baseball.
You know, and I talking about that now, I'm out at the ballpark the other night, I think, just getting through with the game, getting ready to leave. And one of my former players drives up in his pickup truck, got his slow pitch softball gear with him. He pulls up to talk. I hadn't seen him in a while, so we talked. And I said, you know, you're just like every one of my former players. You know, other coaches, their players go on to play high school ball, junior college. All of my former players go into slow pitch softball. And yeah, I've seen two or three of them since then, and I think about that every time.
So, slow pitch softball, to me, is an art. It really is. Because you got those players out there, and you try to place them wherever the guy hits. Unless this guy is somebody like King or Lyons, who hits it over the fence every time they get up.
Yeah, you just
it's almost too automatic sometimes.
You have to try and place the ball.
Yeah.
Hit them where they ain't, you know.
Yeah. All right, we've got another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Dickie Palmer.
Hello, Dick.
Hey.
This is Mike Loretz. I hadn't talked to you in a long time, and I thought I'd give you a call and say hello.
Hey, buddy. Good to talk to you.
I don't know where you met. You used to come in the store all the time.
I do, and I hadn't quit fishing. I'm just slowed down a little.
Well, see, I haven't quit fishing either. I still have my fishing license, but my catching license seems to have run out.
That seems to be the problem. In fact, my granddaughter just got me a little they went to a yard sale today, and she brought back a little hanging plaque that said, "I'd rather be fishing." So I'm going to hang that up somewhere.
Well, I just thought I'd give you a call and say hello to you. I hadn't had the opportunity to talk to you in quite a while.
Hey, I appreciate that.
You have a good day.
You too,
man. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
I will see you next Wednesday, right?
Well, I'll tell you about that book. Today it was like Elvis. It left the building. It headed to the publisher, so in a couple of weeks maybe.
All right, big boy.
Okay.
But you're going to be on my show next Wednesday, right?
Right.
All right. Just want to make sure.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you, Mike.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you.
Did you realize we have 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99? Hi, this is Mike from Maple Street Grill. Debbie and I wanted to invite you down to try some of the exciting new menu items. 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99. Maple Street Grill, 109 North Maple Street in the historic downtown Murfreesboro area.
Hi, I'm Don Patterson, an internal medicine physician with Middle Tennessee Medical Group, a new multi-specialty office dedicated to the health and well-being of you and your family. Our physicians provide expertise in family and internal medicine, as well as other specialties. Middle Tennessee Medical Group offers two locations in Murfreesboro for your convenience. To make an appointment with a Middle Tennessee Medical Group physician, call 396-6800 or visit middletnmedicalgroup.com.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by AmeriCare Pest Control, the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, and the Omni Hot Restaurant in Smyrna.
I've got pesties buzzing, rodents running all through my house, ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I've overrun with pests, but you're gonna be sure, safe and secure, it's the last rights for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
Let's check those Good Neighbor events. Photographs by my buddy Dan Whittle are on display now through June 30th at the Art Center of Cannon County. Don't forget the 20th anniversary luau at the Stones River Country Club for the Primary Care and Hope Center. That's Saturday, June the 16th. Get in touch with Betty McFarland at 893-3930. Again, the 20th anniversary luau is June the 16th. And right now through June the 20th, you're encouraged to stuff the bus as United Way collects school supplies that will be placed in literacy kits and given to needy pre-kindergarten through the third grade students at local schools. Check with United Way for more information. And it's time to adopt one of the 10,000 yellow rubber ducks that'll float down the Stones River at 4:23 on Saturday, June the 23rd. And the first duck through the flume gets its owner $5,000. The Rubber Duck Derby benefits the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. Don't forget the Rubber Duck Derby on Saturday, June the 23rd. That's right there on the Medical Center Parkway at the Sportsman's Club. Adopt your rubber duck today. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
Okay, Murfreesboro, the quack is back. That's right, you heard it here first. The Ducks are back in town on June 23rd for the Sudsy's Car Wash Child Advocacy Center Rubber Duck Derby. We plan to float 10,000 rubber ducks down the Stones River, all to raise money for the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. $5 gets a duck entered into the race for a chance to win a $5,000 cash grand prize. You can adopt your ducks online at duckrace.com/Murfreesboro.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dickie Palmer. And we'll let you know that there is a 250-acre farm, and it's an estate selling in 12 parcels, and it goes on auction block at 10 a.m. Saturday, June the 16th. And it's the estate of Bessie Lovern Gentry and John Gentry, and includes a 3,000-square-foot, 8-room house with two stone fireplaces, oak floors, a large kitchen, and family room. In all, there are 7 5-acre tracts, 2 23-acre tracts, a 26-acre tract, 58-acre tract, and an 86-acre tract. The working farm has been used as a dairy and also as a cattle operation. The majority of the property at the corner of Lovern Road and Rock Springs Road consists of crop and pasture land. Also on site are barns, a silo, 3 ponds, and fencing. Owner financing is available, $10,000 earnest money. That's on the day of the sale. So it's all subject to regrouping. Contact Larry Sims or Bill Cunningham at Sims Realtors, and they are auctioneers. For more information, call them at 615-893-5252. That number again is 615-893-5252.
You've done a little farm work, haven't you, Truman?
I've done a little farm work.
You know, the happiest day of my life was
when you quit?
Was the day my daddy told me, son, I think you're old enough to go in and work in the warehouse. I said, that's it.
Now, you had a nice farm out there on 231 at that time, 231
right.
North.
Right.
It's a beautiful place.
100 acres.
100 acres.
Right.
It looked bigger than that to me.
Well, it got smaller when he started subdividing it and selling real estate off of it.
Now, don't tell me you picked cotton.
I did not pick cotton.
Or you didn't grow tobacco.
Did not grow tobacco. I missed out on those two lovely ventures, but I did chop peppers.
Oh, my goodness.
We chopped weeds out of the peppers. We'd started at one row, and there's about several acres of them. By the time we got through, it's time to start over again because the weeds had already grown where we started chopping. But I only had to do that one summer.
Did you and B.E. get your love of sport from your dad?
Not really.
Hmm.
He was a Tennessee football fan.
Right.
And he would take us to Sulphur Dell a lot, and we'd go to the Central basketball games, and we'd go to the MTSU games. But, you know, I wouldn't say he was a rabid sports fan. I think he knew that we liked it, and that's why he took us. My brother's down in Memphis playing tennis this weekend.
Oh, yeah, he developed a love of tennis many years ago.
Oh, many years ago.
And he was down in Florida there for a long time.
He coached the women's tennis team at the University of Florida for a couple of years before he went into the ministry.
I never will forget B.E. We played football together.
Right.
And B.E. was not one of the largest guys on the team.
He was probably one of the smallest.
But, boy, when he hit you, you knew it. He would jar you.
He
went out for UT football back in, what, 64 maybe?
Yeah, well, Bobby Morton had gone up there, and he and Bobby were best friends.
Yeah.
And he made the taxi squad, and he played up there until he got his collarbone broken, I think, for the second time. And
finally
he came back here and finished up and played with the Boots here at Middle.
I think, was Bowden White the coach at that time?
I think so.
And I have been told that he said that pound for pound, B.E. Palmer could hit harder than anybody he had ever had.
I've heard that.
That's amazing. And B.E., you know, he's very competitive, but you get him away from it, he's not really an aggressive type. I never thought he was anyway.
No, not at all. At least when he strapped it up, though, he was.
Now, going into radio, was that part of your love of sports as the reason that you did that?
I think so. My daddy told me one time that, you know, we used to play Little League out at Grantland Rice Park. And I would
before
sit
at that it was at campus
training
school,
campus
right.
school. But I would sit up there, and my job was to keep the scorebook. So mm-hmm. I kept the scorebook, and Ray Duffy would come out and broadcast the games from time
yeah,
to time.
Yeah, they had a platform right behind first base.
Well, we were up on that platform, and I was keeping the scorebook, and he just put the mic over in my face and said, here, you call an inning.
Wow.
And I don't even remember doing that, but my daddy says I did.
And you have one of those voices, a really good sports announcer. Not only has to have a love and knowledge of the game, but he has to have that voice that actually reaches out and makes the game really fun for you. Yeah. And you and I grew up in a time where we didn't see games on television.
Nope.
I think we would listen to these great sports
exactly.
announcers.
Exactly.
And of course, I listened to the Yankees, which was, what was it? It was the something game of the day that we'd listen
Mutual
to.
Mutual game
Mutual
of the day.
Mutual game of the day. That's it.
And Al Helfer
yeah.
and Gordon McClendon.
Right.
The old Scotsman.
Uh-huh. But you know, when TV started, I really became hooked on Dizzy Dean. Because Dizzy Dean was one of those announcers. He had the voice. He had that funny sense of humor, and he couldn't pronounce anything correctly if he tried to.
Podna, he yes, slid Podna. Into third.
Blue Daughter.
That's a Texas ligger.
Yeah. And I absolutely loved him. And I can't remember the first one he had. I remember he had Pee Wee Reese, but he had Buddy Blattner.
Buddy Blattner.
Buddy Blattner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean. If I would not do anything during the time that they were on television. I had to watch it. It was just so entertaining to me.
Dizzy Dean and his brother Paul pitched for the Cardinals at the same time.
Dizzy and Daffy.
And Dizzy pitched the first game of a doubleheader and pitched a two-hit shutout. And Paul, in the second game, pitched a no-hitter. And Dizzy came up to him after the game just mad as the devil. He said, if you'd told me you was going to do that, I'd have pitched one too.
But you had all that knowledge, and you had the history of going through that era, and that's one reason I've always loved to listen to you call a game so much, because you make it to me, I can watch a game through your eyes better than I can watch it through mine, because when you explain it, it's something about triggering your imagination to the point that it really makes it bigger than life.
Well, that's the greatest compliment that a radio play-by-play man can get. And I appreciate
it's true.
I really do. The fellow that works with me on middle games, home games, John Calla, he's an old-time baseball guy. And he's
I thought he was a sports writer.
He was a sports writer.
And then he was a government writer.
He works yeah. for the city now.
Yeah.
But John grew up in Memphis as a Cardinal fan, and he's still a he's got season tickets to the Cardinals mm. every year. And he goes every weekend there at home. And he's going to give me three of his tickets in August, and I'm going up there to watch the Cardinals play. But anyway, John and I, we gee-haw pretty well because we both go back to that era, and we both are baseball. I'll tell you that, you know, Little League Baseball actually got me my first broadcasting job, my first play-by-play mm-hmm. job. The Little League Park over on Highland Avenue, across from the medical building,
right.
which is now just deserted. But
yeah, it's gone.
We played all of our Little League games over there, and we hosted the state Little League tournament in 1963. State tournament, that was a big deal. Had teams from all over the state come
in.
It
was a big deal.
Well, there's a team from Jackson, Tennessee, coming in, and the radio station in Jackson wanted to broadcast the game, so they called Virgil Trim, who was my boss at WMTS, and said, is there any way y'all can feed us the game? And Virgil said, well, yeah, I've got a guy who'd love to do that. So we set up in that old rickety press box over mm-hmm. on Highland Park, and I broadcast, and I think they won the thing. So I broadcast about three or four games back to Jackson, and that Little League team went on, you know. And the next week, I got a call, and they offered me a job. And I thought, well, this is what I've always wanted to do. You know, I was out of college. I was teaching school at Hobgood and coaching basketball and football. but the radio was just calling to me. And so I talked with Ken Marston, who was the general manager down there, and I took the job. And then Virgil Trim, my boss, he talked me out of it. So we were getting ready to go on with FM. We were a daytime station, but we were getting ready to go with an FM signal, which meant we could broadcast at night and which meant we could do ball games live, because in the past we'd been taping them and playing them back the next day. You remember those days?
Oh, I remember.
So Virgil talked me into staying. So I called Mr. Marston back and said, boy, I sure would like to do that. But, you know, I told him the situation. And he said, well, if you change your mind, call me. Mm-hmm. Well, I got to thinking about it. And they had offered me a huge salary to go down there, $90 a week.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. Of course, back then, that was about $100,000 a year, wasn't it?
Virgil offered me $95. So I kept thinking about it.
Great
competition. And part of me wanted to go, and part of me wanted to stay. So I finally decided I'm going to go. So I called Mr. Marston by. I said, if that job is still open, and if you can match what they offered me here, which was $95 a week, I'll come. He said, come on. So I went down there, and Jackson High School, that's who they were broadcasting in football, had the number one ranked team in the state, had won the state championship in 62 before the playoffs with the polls, the AP poll. Mm-hmm. Won it in 63 my first year, won it in 64 my second year down there. So they had a great run. And we did their basketball. And we started doing basketball for Union University, who at that time was either an NAIA or an NCAA Division II. Mm-hmm. One of the, I don't remember which one. But, and getting around to the rest of that story, I'm leaving tomorrow morning for Jackson, and they're having a reunion of that team during the years that I broadcast down there.
Wow.
For about 5 or 6, 7 years, we broadcast Union basketball. And Billy Henry was a coach. And so my wife and I are going down tomorrow, and they're having a kind of a reunion tomorrow night at Union. So
that's kind of honor. That's a big honor. It really
is. It is.
That you meant so much to those kids during that time.
Well, they invited me last time, and 5, 6 years ago, we went down there and had a good time. And look to do the same tomorrow. So.
You know, when you're a sports player, you love attention from the stands. Mm-hmm. You really do. It doesn't matter which one. But baseball is a little bit closer to the fans, I think. You see them up close, and it just seems like that a baseball player is somebody that's, to me, was bigger than life. When
that's,
I used to watch.
That's exactly right.
But being an announcer now is a little bit different than being an announcer back when you first started, because almost all the sports are fast paced now. I mean, to be an announcer, you're constantly having to relay back to the audience what's going on.
Right.
But baseball is something, to me, you have to be more artistic as a baseball announcer, because you've got to be able to paint a picture while everything's going on, because you have downtime. The batter's going to step out of the batter's box,
right,
and he's going to hit his shoes 4 or 5 times with a bat, or pull on his glove to make sure it's tight every time he has to step out of the box.
And the pitchers are going to be – the pitchers will either work fast,
yeah,
or they'll work slow.
Yeah.
And we had some over at Middle in the last 3 or 4 years that worked so slow. But I told him one, I said, man – I can eat a sandwich in between your pitches, you know?
Now, Pete has gotten some really good ball players out there. And sometimes it seems like it's almost an unknown factor, because if you talk of all the major league players that Pete has produced here, it's been unreal. Now, we've got another caller on the line. So, caller, welcome aboard with Dickie Palmer.
Hey, Truman.
Hey.
Jim Avery.
Hey, Jim.
By the way, I found our other listener today from yesterday.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
It was me.
I knew I had two, and I didn't know where he was, but I found him this morning. I wanted to ask Dickie a question. Dickie, you remember Harlan Hill?
I do. Played at North Alabama.
Yeah, he played with Florence, wasn't it?
Florence State or North Alabama.
Yeah,
I guess it was Florence State back then.
He was that first lonesome man out there.
Right.
Whatever happened to him, you know?
No, I don't. I know he played for the Chicago Bears, and he was all NFL. And because the Chicago Bears were, they were my favorite pro football team at the time. Because the guy that played quarterback at Vanderbilt, Bill Wade, was their quarterback, and I was a big fan of his.
Yeah, Bill Wade used to work for us at Super Service Motor Freight in the off season when he was with the Bears.
Right.
That's amazing.
And then later on, he married the Third National Bank and he quit. anyway, I just wondered because I've asked several people lately because I remember because he was the first one, you know, that they put out there on the end when he come in the ball game and
he was he was one of the first split ends, wasn't he?
Yeah, first. Yep. Well, they called him a lonesome end because
right.
He was out there, and nobody saw him most of the time, and then he ran out for a pass. No wonder he was able to catch so many passes. But anyway, you do a good job, Dick.
Thank you, Jim. Enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
See you, buddy. Bye-bye.
You know, the Bears are my favorite team because WSM-TV used to carry their games every week.
Yeah, they did.
At night. Mm-hmm. They would replay them. At night.
Was that because of Bill Wade going
Because
there?
Bill Wade was the quarterback. Yeah. And so I got, you know, I watched the Bears play every week, you know, black and white TV. And that was before you could get all these games on Sunday afternoon. And middle linebacker, Bill George.
Remember him. Of course, they forgot George after Butkus game.
Well, that's right. But Bill George was
he was tough.
Was the original tough guy.
Who played defensive line for him? From University of Tennessee.
The big guy from Humboldt.
Doug Atkins. From
Humboldt, Tennessee.
He was
right.
The most fearsome guy I think I ever saw.
He was mean. He was a mean player.
And he didn't mind taking your head off either.
Yeah. No telling how much. They'd probably fine him more today than he made.
You know, when after the Clinic Bowl was over with, and we had the banquet afterwards, and then everybody received their jackets.
Right.
Real nice jacket. In fact, I still got mine. I couldn't get in it, but I still got it. And Bill Wade is the one that handed them to us.
Really?
Yeah. And I always thought that was so neat. And we were talking about bigger than life. To us, he was bigger than life at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
He was unreal.
Exactly.
Now, over the time, you've seen a lot of good baseball players around here. When you played and as you were calling games, who would you put in the top five best baseball players, pure baseball player? Doesn't have to be the longest hitter or whatever. I know you've seen a lot of talent here.
You're talking about around here or
yeah,
big
around
league?
Here. No. Around here. No. We're not gonna get into the big league thing. We'll get into a big argument here. I've sure been a Dodger fan. When Jim was talking a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
He was talking about something that you and I knew was quite common. The pro players back during that era, a lot of them had to have extra jobs to make it, to keep up with their expenses.
Exactly.
And everything.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
And I was trying
baseball and football players. Yeah.
And then they got into that collective bargaining, and I can't remember, but as a baseball player, he's a center fielder. He's the one that started all that. I don't know why it went out of my head. But I'm sure in a lot of ways it's good for the players, and I don't think there's any doubt. But in some ways it kind of watered down the teams an awful lot because you had players that would stay with the team
right.
till they retired.
Right.
And you could have more loyalty toward the team at that
well,
time.
Well, you know, and in another way of looking at it, you know, the players really didn't have the option of offering their services to somebody else for a higher price, and they should have that right.
But on the other hand, they were team players.
Yeah.
And there was just something about, all right, I'm the big star, and which movie producer wants me over another one? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put my services out or whatever. But these are teams that we're talking about. And in many sports, in fact, all of the sports, let's just say it, the name guys have taken over the teams and have taken over the sports.
I like a player like Chipper Jones. Chipper Jones
never seemed to have that.
Has never varied from saying that he's an Atlanta Brave for life, and he could have gone.
Yeah,
with free agency and everything, he could have gone somewhere else, but he hasn't. The guy from the Yankees, Derek Jeter, same way, you know. He's a Yankee.
And that's remarkable.
It is.
In New York, especially.
It is, exactly. So, I really respect those guys that build a relationship with the fans and with their teammates and with the front office. And they just don't want to go anywhere else. Now, sometimes a team will, if they're kind of at the end of their career and it's kind of cutthroat, they'll put them on waivers or they'll give them their release.
But don't you think – overall, that hurts the fans.
I know it does.
The loyal guys that are there, they spend money that they don't have. A lot of them do. I mean, it's a major part of their lives, and yet they keep getting slapped in the face by all the things that are happening when it seems like the players are more interested in obscene salaries. Let's look at it. 18 million, 20 million, and it gets beyond that. And Babe Ruth, I don't think he ever made $100,000. He was making a pretty good salary back then, and he was larger than life, as we'd said earlier. But it really does bother me when they're holding up the owners in the city in the areas that they play. They're holding up the fans.
Yeah. That's true.
And it's very difficult for me to follow a team. Of course, I'm a Yankee fan all my life.
Right.
But I have come off of them from time to time. When Steinbrenner bought them out, I was a Dallas fan years ago, football, when they played. And when Jerry Jones bought Dallas out, it has a way of turning your loyalty away from
when
that.
When he fired Tom Landry,
that ended me
with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was one of those people that brought class to the organization. And that's one of the things I loved about the Yankees back in the old days, that they were a class group. I mean, they always dressed well.
Right.
Of course, what they did behind the scenes, that was their business.
Yeah.
But what you saw in front was entirely different.
So things have changed, haven't they? And not for the better, I don't think.
I don't think they have either. And it's hard for me to say that because I'm such a sports fan, and I watch the Atlanta Braves, and I listen to the Atlanta Braves on WGNS, and I'm just absolutely hooked with them. And I can still remember my mom. Of course, you remember my mom. She was sit in front of that TV set as she had gotten a whole lot older and really didn't feel too good. But, boy, when the Braves came on, and you were talking about Chipper, she loved Chipper.
There's something about baseball that appeals to older people, and I don't know what it is. Both my mother-in-law and father-in-law were never big sports fans, but my mother-in-law in Jackson would listen to the Braves, watch them when they were on TV, and just a diehard Braves fan. When she passed away, my father-in-law did the same thing. He was a big Chipper Jones fan. Sometimes these players don't realize how much effect they have on older people who can't go to the ball games, who just depend on the radio or the television to send it out to them. And my grandmother, bless her heart, she listened to a ball game every night after she went to bed. She'd find one on the radio. You know, you could pick up games from out-of-town stations back then. She'd listen. She would go to sleep listening to a ball game every night. Didn't want to go see one.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't want to go.
There's that imagination thing.
Yeah, right? Didn't want to go. We took her to Sulphurdale one night, and she didn't like it. She said, "I can't hear it."
Now that's hard to believe.
Yeah,
now.
Didn't want to go, but she wanted to listen to him on the radio.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dickie Palmer.
Some of you might have heard of the Doughboy Challenge for Charity. Well, it's back. I'm Katie and I work for General Mills here in Murfreesboro, and I'm excited for this year's 7th annual Doughboy Challenge, a 5K run to raise money for three local charities. This year, we are partnering with Nash Vegas Rollers, the Exchange Club, and CASA of Rutherford County. Last year, we raised over $35,000, and this year, our goal is over $50,000. On June 9th, be a part of our 5K on the Square. Bring the kids and be a part of our local Murfreesboro community. If you have questions or want to register, check out DoughboyChallenge.com.
The Bunganut Pig is back and better than ever in the borough.
This is Janet Bowman at Mid-South Bank, and this is an awesome place for lunch. Great food. You can get in and out. Best service available in town. So if you're in a rush or not, come on in and enjoy the great food and great service.
Join the Bunganut Pig every Tuesday night for live music. The Bunganut Pig on Northfield in the Georgetown Square. HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
You're listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now, back to Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dickie Pomper. We want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. And when you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything from the simple oil change to major auto repair. Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. You know, I kind of wish that I had been able to do some of that stuff that you've done, Dickie, as far as following the games. To me, going all the way across the country, maybe being in different towns for 4 or 5 months away from home, I know it's got to wear on you some. But you almost have to look forward to every day, to every stadium you go to, because it's just almost something magical about a baseball field.
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, we don't go to that many great venues in the Sun Belt, but they're all reasonably nice. And you know, the best thing about going on the road is just traveling with the team and getting to know the guys and kind of rubbing shoulders with them and finding out what they're like and what they want to do, and you know what they're going to do with their lives and that sort of thing. Jonathan Freebus, named freshman All-American this year.
Oh wow, great
freshman All-American. Hunter Atkins drafted in the 14th round, I believe.
I saw that.
Yeah, but those were two players who were really two of our three starting weekend pitchers.
What is Pete looking at next year?
Well.
I've heard it looks pretty good.
None of the signees got drafted. That's good in a way and maybe not so good in a way. But I know we lost one last year who was drafted and went pro. But he's got some good players lined up, and he's got some good ones coming back. In fact, the whole infield will be back.
Oh, that's good.
With the exception of our first baseman, Guidry, and Guidry did not get drafted, and that shocked
that is
most
odd,
of us.
Because he comes from a baseball family.
Well, yeah, he came from an athletic family. Mm-hmm. His dad played in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But we think he'll get a tryout with somebody. And then we've got the entire outfield back, catcher's back. So got a lot of players coming back. But you know what baseball is? Winning baseball is pitching. And defense.
Yeah.
That's it.
And pitching is always first.
That's it.
I tell you what, I know that you watch the Braves like I do and listen to them on the station here, but they have got a closer. The Braves have pitching. It is unreal.
Keep them close.
Oh, my goodness. When he comes on, it's almost automatic.
Keep them close until the last inning. I hope they don't overuse him again this year.
Well, you know, the the gun that's used to see how fast a player is throwing. They have really come to play in the last few years because we've got at least five players in the major leagues that are throwing the ball over 100 miles an hour from time to time. It's almost like happened, Nolan Ryan.
Tell you what happened to one of them last night. Adonis Chapman for the for the Reds, that closer, had not given up a run, an earned run, all season.
Right.
They're playing Pittsburgh last night. Michael McHenry, who caught for Pete back 5-6 years ago and is now with the Pittsburgh Pirates, McHenry hit a sacrifice fly in the seventh inning to tie the game. And in the top of the 10th against Chapman, he doubled to the wall on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and that drove in the winning run. And McHenry was the star of the game.
Anybody can
An MTSU graduate.
He sure is. Yeah. A Pete product.
That's all right. Coach Pete's product.
And he does. He salts the major leagues with players that we're so lucky to have that quality of sports here in baseball, and it's kind of mirrored by the stadium they have. I don't believe there's a better stadium in baseball in college and better than the one that they've got here at MTSU.
No, and it ought to be full every game, and it's not. And that distresses me.
How do we get the word out? I had Chris on, and you know what a great guest he was.
Yeah.
And we're so fortunate to have him. But everybody's working so hard. How do we get that out? No, because there are still so many baseball
fans. We go to Lafayette,
fans.
Louisiana. They will average about 1,500 a game, and most games they'll have over 2,000 to 3,000 people there.
And that's the area around there doesn't have near as many people as we've
got. No, and they had a bad team last year. They didn't make the tournament.
That's amazing.
Go figure.
And they do everything you can to try to get them here. Well, maybe it's because everybody likes to listen to you rather than go to the game.
No, that's
maybe
not
Maybe it's
it.
Your fault.
That's not it. That's not. I'm not going to take that rap.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I'm always glad to be around you, Dickie. You're one of my favorite people. Of course, we've known each other ever since we were kids. But you have done so much for the community and so much for MTSU and sports all together. You have always been one of these people like Gilbert Sharon and Jack Jolly, and the list goes on and on about people who have contributed so much to our young people here. And that's what makes the quality of life so great here.
I hope my wife is listening to all this because I told her I was going to be on today.
She's got a pen in her hand. It's going to bust your bubble when you go right through the door.
I get fussed at a lot for going to the ballpark and this sort of thing. So
she loves that for you, though.
I hope she does. She's put up with me for a lot of years.
Yeah, bless her heart. All right, we're going to be gone, and we'll see you guys next Monday at 2 o'clock. Won't have Dickie on, but we're going to miss him. See ya.
Thank you, Truman.